Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, June 3rd, 2026. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Rusty Ulps is appealing Moscow Board of Adjustment decision to the Moscow City Council against his proposed conditional use permit to operate music and dance classes plus Sunday church services in prominent downtown retail space. Father of Spokane 3 convict Bajan Mavawala II speaks about loss of right to protest ICE in exclusive interview with KRFP. And Friends of the Clearwater says Trump motorized vehicle executive order replaces imperfect system for public lands with chaos. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Local developer Roderick Rusty Ulps has appealed the Moscow Board of Adjustment's April 27th decision to deny a conditional use permit to use the former Paradise Creek bicycle shop space at 513 South Main Street in downtown Moscow as a music, dance, and exercise class venue. The appeal will go to the Moscow City Council, which will hear it at their Monday, June 15th meeting at City Hall. Despite the retail space's window only having a for lease sign during the last few months, Ulps closed the purchase of the building on April 30th. A public notice of the appeal hearing says, when considering the merits of an appeal, no additional public testimony or information shall be taken or considered by the council. 40 members of the public testified before the Board of Adjustment against granting the conditional use permit on April 27th, with none other than the applicant testifying in favor. A number of those against the conditional use permit said the proposed use of the two-story space would not be in harmony with surrounding uses because Moscow's Central Business District is a collection of food, entertainment, and retail establishments fronting on Main Street within walking distance of each other. One example is from Jana Argersinger, who spoke April 27th about the Central Business District, which she referred to as the CBD.
In my view, the proposed use is not in keeping with the spirit or intent of Moscow's CBD. In recent years, we have seen a series of similar CUP applications granted to dismay and cumulative effect. And cumulative effect, like others who have spoken for me, that's a big consideration. It's gradually eroding our downtown's visible vitality, its commercial character, and its intended contribution to the city's budgetary health. I have loved, and patronized the locally owned bike shop at 513 South Main Street for decades, and I want more such businesses. What we need, I believe, is courageous decision-making by the city to stop the trend away from commercial space, especially locally owned commercial space. Not only to stop the trend, but to reverse it for the good of the community as a whole.
Others at the Board of Adjustment hearing spoke about Rusty Ulps' connections to Christ Church, whose pastor Doug Wilson has for decades expressed his intention to make Moscow a Christian town and referred to the citizens of Moscow as the enemy. They noted Ulps put at the bottom of his conditional use permit application that an additional use of the Paradise Creek bicycle space would be for small church services on Sundays. A few at the hearing warned that testimony will likely be used as fodder for a lawsuit by Ulps against the city when he doesn't get his way. The newly weaponized Trump Justice Department's Civil Rights Division has essentially stopped finding justice for victims of racism and has focused its attention on perceived prejudice against Christianity, especially Christian nationalist organizations insisting on exceptionalism in the public sphere. The Trump Civil Rights Division has sued the city of Troy, Idaho, in a similar case on behalf of Christ Church of Moscow. In May of last year, the Trump Civil Rights Division sued the city of Troy for attempting to enforce its zoning ordinance against a Christ Church satellite congregation that wants to operate in the downtown business district there. The Justice Department claims the city's denial of a permit to operate a church in the downtown business zone violates the federal Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act. A news release from the Justice Department also claimed the city denied the Christ Church permit application because the great majority of city residents opposed granting the permit. But the Troy City Attorney says the city denied the permit application simply because the church would have violated city zoning code at the downtown location. The Troy Downtown Zoning District allows clubs, museums, auditoriums, art galleries, and retail businesses. Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dillon of the Trump Justice Department's Civil Rights Division wrote in a news release, "The Religious Land Use and Institutionalized Persons Act, quote, unequivocally forbids local governments from deciding zoning matters based on their dislike of certain religious groups. The Department of Justice will not hesitate to file suit against jurisdictions that discriminate in land use matters on the basis of the applicant's religious beliefs." The lawsuit claims the city's zoning code treats religious assembly different than non-religious assembly. According to the Spokesman Review, Troy City Attorney Todd Richardson said, at the time, the Justice Department complaint is misleading and incorrect. Richardson said, the fact that it was this church had zero to do with the denial. However, the Civil Rights Division cited public testimony opposing Christ Church's desire for exceptional treatment during Troy's public hearing on the conditional use permit in their lawsuit against the city. According to press reports last year, despite the denial of the conditional use permit, Christ Church was holding Sunday church services at its downtown Troy location in violation of Troy's zoning laws. Christ Church has a history of flaunting local laws in Moscow during the COVID pandemic. Before there were vaccines, Christ Church Pastor Doug Wilson organized a maskless shopping event at Tri-State Outfitters in Moscow without notifying the store staff, forcing the store to close for part of the day during the holiday shopping season. About the same time, Christ Church also organized maskless public singing events at City Hall and in Friendship Square, which put the public in danger from the spread of the virus. Three associates of Christ Church, including then-deacon and county commission candidate Gabriel Wrench, won a lawsuit against the city for their October 2020 arrest at City Hall parking lot by Moscow police for violating the mask ordinance and not showing ID. City council members had failed to account for another part of city code relating to temporary emergency measures that exempted religious gatherings. In early 2021, the Moscow City Council corrected the wording of the emergency mask ordinance so it applied to religious gatherings. The father of one of the Spokane Three, who a federal grand jury convicted last week on felony conspiracy charges, says the verdict essentially means people have lost their right to protest in this country. A jury convicted Afghanistan combat veteran Bejun Mavalwala II, social activist Justice Forall, and Gonzaga Law School alum Jack Archer of conspiracy to impede or injure a law enforcement officer, although the jury made clear they were only imposing the verdict on the impede part of the charge, not the injure part. Local police arrested 34 people who were trying to block ICE agents from illegally detaining two Venezuelan Spokane residents near downtown Spokane last year on June 11th, and charges were dropped against most of them. Then came the arrests of the Spokane 9 by the FBI and U.S. Marshals Service in July. Those arrests on felony charges came days after Trump installed another acting U.S. attorney for Eastern Washington after acting U.S. attorney Richard Barker resigned, alluding to pressure from the Trump administration for felony prosecution of ICE protesters. Six of the Spokane 9 took plea deals, and a jury convicted the remaining three on Thursday of last week. KRFP citizen journalist Brenda Cox spoke with Bejun Mavawala Sr., who is the father of one of the convicted protesters, Bejun Mavawala II. Mavawala Sr., who is running for Congress in Washington's 5th District, was in Clarkston at a Democratic Party campaign event yesterday.
A jury did convict him of a crime. However, it was not on any of the counts that he was arrested on or that has been before him for the last 10 months. What they did is halfway through the trial itself, they suddenly came back and said they were going to add aiding and abetting. So they cleared him of all of the original charges. And halfway through the trial, we're supposed to be talking about aiding and abetting a conspiracy. Now, my question is, how do you aid and abet a conspiracy? You're either part of a conspiracy or you are not part of a conspiracy. It's like a light switch. It's either on or it's off. What's concerning is that by saying that aiding and abetting a conspiracy is a conspiracy is equivalent to being part of a conspiracy with 6 years in federal prison and $250,000 fine to be faced. The thing is that literally hundreds of people who were at that same protest could be considered aiding and abetting a conspiracy. The right to protest in this country is one of the most basic founding principles. That is literally what is at stake here. We will lose our right to protest. That's what this jury just came back with, and it's not their fault. It's the fault of the prosecution and the Department of Justice who demanded that this happen. And they essentially told the jury, you don't have a choice but to come back with some kind of guilty verdict, because we're not going to tell you the facts surrounding the case.
How's your family coping with this? And how's his significant other?
There's a lot of stress on the family. There's no doubt about that. But we've all been preparing for this for quite a while. Now, there's two things we couldn't prepare for. One is a magical appearance of a new charge in the middle of a trial. And the other, of course, was nobody expects the FBI a month after a protest to come banging on the door to arrest you for a non-violent protest. So the family is doing okay. Beji's girlfriend, Kate, had said, we are not weak people. She is an Afghanistan combat veteran. Beji is an Afghanistan combat veteran, as am I. And we are used to standing up for our country. We believe in this country. We believe in the rights that are inherent and guaranteed by the Constitution. But those are under attack. And that's what we're trying to make sure that we are fighting for to protect. But my son is at the very tip of the spear, fighting for Americans' rights.
So what's next?
Well, the federal court, there's a reason that Dick Wolf doesn't have a show called Law and Order Federal Court, because it would be incredibly boring and make no sense whatsoever. The first thing, for example, is that we were not allowed, they actually tried to block from the jury knowing that my son is a veteran. The jury was not allowed to know that the gentlemen that had been taken by ICE were later released as soon as they got before a federal judge because they were here legally. This was an illegal arrest in the first place. The jury was not allowed to know that Richard Barker, the first U.S. attorney, refused to prosecute the case. And then the second acting U.S. attorney had my son arrested and the others, but she was fired in 3 weeks in place, replaced by Pete Serrano, who is a Trump loyalist who sends money to Trump via his ghost organization called the Silent Majority Foundation. He has never prosecuted a case in his entire life, and he is so unqualified that they didn't even put him before the Senate. So he was never confirmed by the Senate. He is an illegally appointed U.S. attorney. Then they got rid of him. Pam Bondi's fired. And so Todd Blanche takes up the mantle on this. But the jury was never allowed to hear any of that. The jury was never allowed to hear any of the salient legal arguments on what led up to the protest, or the most important one, the jury was not allowed to hear arguments about First Amendment rights. You could not mention the First Amendment. I can't think of anything more salient to a protest than talking about the First Amendment. So when we're looking at this case as a society, while my son was cleared of all the original charges, the jury did not find him guilty on any of those. The danger is that they convicted him of aiding and abetting, which literally means you do not have a right to protest in this country. I think what's important for everyone in Eastern Washington to know is this started here. We were targeted by Washington, D.C. They brought the swamp here. This was intentional. It was not an accident. They thought they could secure convictions here. That's why they did it here.
Do you think that the Trump administration holds a grudge with Bob Ferguson or Brown?
No. Spokane is a... it's an anomaly. There is a... Well, it's a sanctuary city, but that's not the point. It is a blue dot in a red sea. So they knew that by bringing a case here, they could get a jury from a very conservative area, and they could fire up a protest in a very liberal area. But what people need to understand is that it's not a matter of liberal or conservative. It's, do you believe in the Bill of Rights or don't you? Do you believe in protest? Because if you only believe that you have the right to protest for things you like and no one else does, that the people that you oppose don't have a right to protest, you don't have a First Amendment. You don't have a right to free speech. You do not have a right of assembly. That's the danger. You don't get to choose your flavor of protest. You don't get to choose your flavor of freedom. There's either freedom or there's not.
That was Bejun Mavawala Sr., whose son faces 6 years in prison and $250,000 fine after a federal jury in Spokane convicted him last week of aiding and abetting a felony conspiracy to impede or injure a law enforcement officer at a protest last year against an ICE enforcement action in Spokane. ICE had detained two Venezuelan asylum seekers who were living in Spokane. The jury was not allowed to hear that a judge released one of the two Venezuelans back to Spokane after months in the GEO Group's detention facility in Tacoma, saying ICE had abused its legal authority. The other Venezuelan chose to self-deport after months in a detention cell under harsh and crowded conditions with no end in sight.
In the face of rising care costs and closing nursing homes, more people from Washington and across the country are moving abroad to get the residential care they need in their final years of life. Writer Ana de la Cruz researched this trend after her own father departed Washington for care in Mexico. Nursing homes in the Seattle area can cost more than $125,000 a year compared to facilities in Chapala, Mexico. De la Cruz warns that with massive Medicaid cuts underway, the situation will only worsen for families struggling to pay for care.
Nursing homes are actually already closing in anticipation of all of these cuts or directly because of them, and particularly in high need areas. So the supply is lessening as the demographics are increasing the demand and the need.
By 2060, people 65 and older will account for a quarter of the nation's population. De la Cruz says in the last 5 years, nearly 800 nursing homes shut their doors. She adds there are at least 60,000 people from the U.S. collecting Social Security and living in Mexico. De la Cruz explains, along with savings, some facilities in Mexico can provide a more loving and respectful environment than in the U.S. But she says there are still challenges surrounding language barriers, differences in legal protections, and limited access to advanced care hospitals. She says moving abroad for the end of life can be a great alternative for some people, but it's not for everyone.
It's not something that anyone should be forced into the position to make that kind of decision when they're vulnerable and in a position of crisis, because making decisions in that moment is never the best time.
De la Cruz's father died after a 45-minute ambulance ride to the nearest level 3 hospital in Guadalajara. She says small strokes and an internal infection went undetected, and she often wonders whether the outcome might have been different had he remained in the U.S. This story was produced with original reporting from Ana de la Cruz with the Better Life Lab at New America and Slate. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The Moscow-based environmental group Friends of the Clearwater has weighed in on Trump's decision last Friday to repeal executive orders from the 1970s regulating off-road vehicles and over-snow vehicles on public lands. Like other conservation groups, Friends of the Clearwater said in a statement that the executive order threatens to destroy wildlife habitat and pollute water on public lands around the U.S. Trump's executive order repealed President Richard Nixon's 1972 executive order and President Jimmy Carter's 1977 executive order requiring federal agencies designate trails for off-road vehicle use and locate those trails where they would minimize damage to soil, vegetation, watersheds, wildlife, and habitat, and minimize conflicts between off-road vehicle use and other recreational uses such as backpacking. Friends of the Clearwater sent a response to the Trump executive order in an email to the public last night. The response said the Nixon and Carter executive orders in the 1970s have for decades allowed the public to participate in management decisions that would affect wildlife. The statement said, for example, when the Forest Service decided to open the Fish Lake Trail to motorized use in a travel management plan, we were able to challenge that decision. We opposed allowing off-road vehicles on that trail since it did not comply with forest plan requirements for elk habitat. Eventually, we lost the Fish Lake Trail fight, but the national system of managing off-road use, while imperfect, remained. That may no longer be the case. This decision, like many of the Trump administration, replaces an imperfect system with complete disorder, wholly on the side of the most exploitative uses possible. This is a particular loss for rare species like grizzly bears and mountain goats, whose long-term survival in our region is severely impacted by motorized use. Grassroots organizations are the main line of defense for our public lands. We will update you if and when there is an opportunity for public comment, such as if a new rule on off-road use is announced. For now, we are looking into how to combat this reckless decision.
As an increase in corporate mergers impacts Oregon's healthcare systems, more workers are choosing to unionize to preserve a seat at the decision-making table. New data from Axios finds over 70% of Oregon's hospitals are now concentrated in ownership, and such mergers can lead to worse working conditions for staff. Respiratory therapist Erica Taylor is one of 43 technologists at Providence Hood River Memorial Hospital who voted to join Oregon Nurses Association last month. This is her first time with a union job, and she says her coworkers with union experience speak highly of them.
Every time they would be like, working for a union outfit is always better than working for a non-union outfit. My dad was a longtime union member. You just always seemingly have better work environments, better relationships with management.
In 2016, Providence merged with St. Joseph Health, creating one of the largest nonprofit health systems in the United States. A representative from ONA explains when workers negotiate union contracts, they're advised to include language that will protect them in the case of a merger, change of ownership, or layoffs. Providence did not respond in time to a request for comment. Taylor explains she and her coworkers are often alone during their 12-hour shifts, so they can't leave during lunch breaks. Yet management asks them to clock out every day anyway. When she learned this was illegal, she says she tried for a year and a half to work out a solution with management. When none came, she turned to ONA.
I was like, that seems crazy. I wouldn't ask management to work for free, and I don't appreciate being asked to work for free.
ONA now represents more than 25,000 nurses and frontline healthcare workers across Oregon. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather, there's a 20% chance of precipitation tonight, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m., then a slight chance of showers before midnight, mostly cloudy, gradually becoming mostly clear, low 47. Mostly clear skies Thursday through Friday. High 68 Thursday with the west winds 5 to 10, gusts up to 20, low 43 Thursday night, and high 69 Friday, light west winds increasing to 10 to 15 in the morning, gusts up to 25. Partly cloudy Friday night, low 44, and mostly clear Saturday through Sunday, highs 60 Saturday, 63 on Sunday with a low of 38 Saturday night. Currently 72 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business or nonprofit supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, community radio for the Palouse at 90.3 on your FM dial and online.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.